On this episode of The Big Number with Dan Devine, we dive into the numbers to try and answer these questions. Has LeBron James become one of the greatest three-point shooters of all time? What if the Hulk flew and Superman was that angry all the time? And lastly, would making dunks worth 3 points solve the NBA's sameness problem? That and more coming up right now on The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and you're watching The Big Number, our new weekly podcast that drops every Thursday. We're going to go deep on a big topic, a big player, a big stat that is going to blow your mind, and we'll spend the next half hour talking about that. Dan, you're my co-host. What's up, buddy?
I got the call to come back and continue co-hosting, so I showed up again here at the Yahoo Sports Studios in New York City. Tom, let's put up some numbers.
Where's Manhattan? Is that over this shoulder or that shoulder?
Well, the whole city's on my shoulders. I'm carrying the whole thing. It's the way I feel all the time. The weight of New York City on me constantly. It is behind me and this side. I'm bad at directional movements and space work, which is why I have not succeeded in acting. But here
I am. Or meteorology. You're not a weatherman.
Yeah. There's like a lot of problems here. There's a lot of general problems in this region. Maybe someday. I don't know. If this career doesn't pan out, if this podcast doesn't work out so well, maybe I'll have to pivot and move in that direction. But so far, so good.
Late career changes and being good at something later in your career. You know what? We should do a big number about that topic. Let's do it.
I love that idea. Anybody have in mind? Anybody in particular?
I've got LeBron James on my mind. LeBron James, who is still doing amazing things and continuing to evolve. So let's do the big number this week. This week's big number is 826. That is the number of three-pointers that LeBron James has made as a Los Angeles Laker, which is more three-pointers than the entire careers of all-time great sharpshooters like Chris Mullin, Steve Kerr, his former teammate, James Jones, Robert Horry, Byron Scott. LeBron James, in 7 years as a Los Angeles Laker, has already eclipsed those guys, those amazing flamethrowers, in three-point makes for their entire careers. 826, Dan. I am astounded routinely at LeBron James continuing to add weapons to his arsenal. And right when we think he's in the twilight of his career with the Los Angeles Lakers and the sun is setting, he says, nah, 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 I'm going to launch not only a lot of threes, but I'm going to make them at a high rate. The last two seasons, okay? Last two seasons as a Laker, LeBron James has shot 41% last season on five attempts per game. This season, he's at 41.6%. from downtown on about five attempts per game. If you think that is just like, whatever, that's just the norm in today's NBA. No, I posit, look at this number here. He is among the 96 players that have at least 5 3-point attempts per game over the last two seasons. LeBron James, among those 96 players, he's 11th in 3-point field goal percentage. 11th. This dude, he's racking up triple-doubles every other night, it seems. He's turning 40 years old in like a month. And the Lakers are now 10-4 because, in part, LeBron James has decided, I'm going to be an elite three-point shooter. And I don't know what to make of this because, like, at some point, he's going to show his age. But he keeps getting better and sharpening his tool set. And I wonder, Dan, like, given that he went to Paris and played and started and played huge minutes in the Olympics, given that, you know, he's got this whole Bronny James thing, that's the circus, the media circus that has caused him, by the way, to shut down his social media. I do think, you know what, if you know LeBron and you're watching this, listening to this, go send this to him because I know he's off social media. Maybe you can text the big number over to him, see what he thinks. Dan, with all this swirling around, with JJ Redick becoming a head coach after being a podcaster, of course, player, this all seemed like maybe this year was more about sentiment, more about ceremony, more about just the optics rather than the performance. But I posit to you, If he keeps this up, Dan, this is the most impressive season for LeBron James in his career. If he keeps this up, meaning the numbers, the performance, and also that translating to a top four seed in the Western Conference, which the Lakers at 10-4 are right in the mix for. So, Dan Devine, are you as impressed by LeBron James, his three-point shooting in particular, and how that has fueled the Los Angeles Lakers' strong start to the season?
I mean, I would be kind of a real jerk to no-sell it and be like, not that impressive. Like, I'm 42 years old, and I barely got in here today, let alone putting up triple-doubles at a regular clip. Like, that's, I put up, you know, double singles in my just day-to-day life broadly. And so I find what he is doing incredibly impressive. The skeptic or hater in me, which lives right here in my heart, is a little bit like, what is the stat buff that we apply to just being old? Because, like, I remember LeBron James 2007, 2008, 2009, 2012 in Miami when you were covering him down there. And, like, it was the breakthrough for the championship with the Heat. And then he goes to the Olympics and, you know, leads Team USA to a gold medal in London, wins MVP, is, like, pretty uniformly, like, this is the best player in the world. Like, that's... that is the most impressive up close and personal I've ever seen. But doing that outside of your prime years and being in position to be like, I put up 24-8-9 on a 59 win team at 40. Yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty hard to downgrade that if he keeps it up. And I think a lot of that is going to depend on the overall success of the Lakers. But a lot of the overall success of the Lakers is organized around the way LeBron has remade his game to move out to the perimeter to make space for their big man Anthony Davis to be dominant in the middle. Like, we started our podcast by talking about preseason stretch fives and guys who are going to keep up their three-point shooting and would Anthony Davis do it. Turns out Anthony Davis doesn't really need to if he's got space to cook inside and just beast mode everybody. And he can do that a little bit more easily when LeBron is a 42% shooter on volume, which he never was before the last couple of years, which is mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. And, you know, part of you looks at this and says, how sustainable is this? He did it last year. When you expand the pool and get a larger sample size, like, he is right now, a lot of evidence points to being a 40% three-point shooter. And I think what's fascinating to me is that when you dig into the numbers, according to Synergy Sports, he is shooting better on guarded catch and shoots than unguarded. He's shooting 46% on threes when he's being guarded, when he has a hand in the face on those catch and shoots, than when he doesn't. And that is astounding. It also might make you feel like maybe this is just small sample size theater and this is kind of going the other way. But Dan, I want to tell you a story about Mike Bibby.
I guess I can hear a story about Mike Bibby. I mean, I'm in a padded walls room. You know, why not? I got nowhere else to be.
Mike Bibby is a guy that came over to the Miami Heat in 2011. You remember, kind of picked up off the scrap heap. He was with the Wizards, and he comes into the team that's aspiring to win the championship. And Eric Spoelstra starts him for the majority of the playoffs, and then it just kind of fell apart. But I do remember Mike Bibby showing up, the name, the aura of Mike Bibby, great three-point shooter. And we're like, dude, can you imagine how many open looks you're going to have when you join this monster team with the big three, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and how many open three-pointers you're going to get? It's going to be like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. And he looks at all the reporters and he's like, I actually hate open threes. I don't like having space on my three-pointers because I get all, like, clammed up, and I actually prefer a tighter contested three-pointer. And we were like, no way. Sure enough, the rest of the year, he bricked, like, every open three that he had, and he was 100% right. That some players just do not like pressure, or do not like the pressure of an open three-pointer. They prefer to have a little bit of contested threes, and LeBron James is doing that this season. So if you don't think it's sustainable that he's hitting all these contested tough shots, it's LeBron James. He might actually prefer something like this. So I think at this stage of his career, he's going to be guarded a lot more on his threes. He's not as mobile as he might have used to be. And if he does get that open air, I think he is going to be a better shooter. You look at the first 5 years in his career, he's a 32% shooter from downtown. Next five, he's 35. Next five, he's 35 again. Next five seasons, 35%. And then in the last two here with the Lakers, he's at 41%. So it does depend on the variety of three-point shots that he's getting. But I'm pretty safe to say, Dan, he is an elite three-point shooter right now, right?
I think he's earned that reputation over the last couple of years for sure. I mean, like if you add up kind of all the shots, I mean, you'd know better than me what is the sample size you've got to clear for shooting to kind of stabilize, normalize. But the last 2 years, you go for like regular season, postseason, preseason, Team USA, all of it. He's well over 600 attempts from three, and he's making them at like a 38.5% clip, 39% clip. That's bankable to me. That's legit. The catch and shoot, or the guarded catch and shoot numbers, I thought that was worth kind of pulling out, not to be a hater, but because I think that there's a reason to believe someone who is 6'8", 6'9", has that lean back on the form. Like, it's hard to get to his shot. So, like, even somebody coming up to contest, he's able to get it to his release point and maybe let it go in a way where there's no sort of only so much you can do about it once he gets it up there. But that 46% was the guarded catch and shoot? 46.7%. It's insane. 46.7%. You go back the last handful of years, and like every year among guys who take at least 50 of those, it's like two guys, three guys, one guy clears that number each year. So like, it's, you know, Norm Powell and Aaron Holiday last year. Luke Kennard is the only one the year before that. Kevin Porter Jr., Paul George, and Caleb Martin the year before that. Like, it's 1, 2, 3 basically each year. So, and the name that we haven't said in any of those lists is LeBron James. So it is possible and maybe likely that that number will come down as the sample increases. Yeah. But he has, it's also just wild. You kept saying next five. Like, most guys don't get five, let alone four different next fives. But that's where we are with LeBron James. He has gotten better. The evolution in his game, you pointed to that. It's such a great point. Like, the way he's added on aspects, where it was going from just being, I'm faster and stronger than everybody, to I'm adding the post game, to pick and roll mastery and being able to pull up with the jumper, to extending that pull up out to 3-point. Like, he has the complete game now. And I think the reason for that, one of the biggest reasons you need to do that, is because the best way to make sure you're playing at a high level at 40 is to stop trying to play like you're 20. And it's a lot easier. While nothing LeBron James does is easy, he just makes it look that way. But it's a lot easier to raise up from 25, 28 feet at, you know, however many handful of times a game, than it is to go through three layers of defense, like a running back between the tackles 20 times a game, like he did earlier in his career. This season, 29.2% of LeBron's points have come from beyond the arc, highest of his career. His drives per game down underneath 10. He's been living there basically since the bubble, whereas it used to be 14, 15, way above that. Even when he does drive now, he's passing out 40% of the time. That would be the highest for the last 12 years, which Second Spectrum has the data. Like, it's the first time in his career he's outside the top 15 in points in the paint. This is LeBron migrating his game out, because this is like, it's a marathon every year, and he needs to not be sprinting constantly if he wants to be able to get to April, May, June, you know, in one piece. And that's, I think, the thing when you talk about his Lakers career, right? That's the big number, 826, is his Lakers career. What happened LeBron James's first year in Los Angeles? Groin injury, right? Yep, first soft tissue, like major soft tissue injury of his career. First time he missed significant time. And then as that has gone on, he has migrated further and further out, because he's got to, you know, consolidate. He's got to make sure he's taking care of himself. If he wants to be able to play 80 games, play 90 games, play deep into springtime, he needs to be in one piece. And the best way to make sure he gets there is figuring out when to fire those bullets, when to go full clip, go all out. And if you don't have to, if you can shoot 40% from three on a handful of attempts a game, you don't have to do that all that often.
As he likes to say, Father Time is undefeated. But if you have a really good three-point shot, you're going to hold off Father Time for quite a while. The guy is eighth in all-time three-point makes. Eighth. Dan, he has a chance, if he continues what he's doing, he has a chance to finish top five all-time in three-pointers made. I mean, when it's all said and done, that might be the most ridiculous. He's already, you know, the all-time scoring leader, and that's not his best skill. Like, I would argue passing is his best skill. He led the league in assists just a few years ago, and now he's added a legit three-point weapon after being about average for the majority of his career. And I'm now looking at the standings and seeing, like, he's going to pass Kyle Korver for all-time three-pointers made. Ridiculous. He's right there with Klay Thompson, neck and neck with Klay Thompson as one of the all-time high volume, but now high efficiency three-point shooters. So we've got four more little numbers that we need to get to make it a five-pack here on why this might be LeBron James's most impressive season if he keeps this up and leads the Lakers to a top four seed. After the break, we'll get into those four little numbers. All right, Dan, before we dive into these four little numbers here,
if we can just do a lot of Jack Black scatting in this segment, I think the B block would be a lot more fun for me personally.
All right, Dan, before we get into the four little numbers here, I want to remind the audience that LeBron James has had four Hall of Fame careers. Four. Statistically, if you break it down, wrote about this at tomthefinder.com, that if you want, you can put four different careers end to end within LeBron James's career, and they will all be Hall of Fame caliber, which is absurd. And he's adding to it. He might add a fifth by the time this season is done. So, Dan, let's unpack some of these little numbers here that support how great LeBron James has been this season. What's the first one, Dan?
Well, the first one in my brain is four is, of course, always at the top of our mind, because why do we take threes, Tom? Because there are no fours. Because Antoine Walker, always deep in my heart. The first number
Wait,
today,
can I say something real quick on that?
About Antoine Walker? Yes, of course, always.
Did you know who is the all-time leader in three-point makes without a four-pointer?
Well, I mean, now I can't possibly guess. You got to tell me who.
Antoine Walker.
No!
Isn't that so sad? Isn't that the saddest thing? The guy who is known for the most amazing line about why he takes so many threes because there are no fours, literally the basketball gods have not given him a four-pointer in his entire career. It's just, man, come on. Come on, man.
It's like an O. Henry story or the Twilight Zone episode about, you know, there was finally time now. Why did my glasses break? This is that kind of thing. Little big numbers. Number one, 47.3. That is how many points per 36 minutes LeBron is creating for the Lakers this season. Shouts out to my former Ringer colleague, Zach Cram. His points created metric, which adds up total points scored, assist points generated, so how many you create with your pass, and screen assist points. Everybody hates screen assists, but I don't for this. You add them up and divide by 36. LeBron's in the top 10 among players with at least 300 minutes. 47.3 points per 36 minutes created by LeBron James puts him right between like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Alperen Şengün in Houston, just ahead of Jason Tatum and Anthony Davis. This guy turns 40 in 6 weeks and is two games away from 69,000 career minutes, and he's still creating points at a top 10 level. This is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. And haven't we all written that story? Like, how he can't keep doing this, right? He can't keep being this heliocentric, creating everything for everybody. And he continues to do this. You know, I looked at the MVP tracker on Basketball Reference yesterday. LeBron is seventh in the MVP tracker. Based on his numbers this year, he's in the running to be an MVP candidate this season based on his scoring. That's absurd. Like, that's absurd. And when you look at what he does for the Lakers offense, you know, J.J. Redick came in here, and I think one of his top goals, Dan, was to keep that number down, right? It's like, we don't have to have everything rolling through LeBron, and he's funneled things through Dalton Knecht and Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, who, by the way, is fueling a lot of those three-pointers with his passing. I think he has seven three-pointers. LeBron has seven three-pointers this season from directly D'Angelo Russell. That's one of the agenda items probably for J.J. Redick is how do we preserve LeBron or extend this window by taking some stuff off his back? And Anthony Davis is a big part of that. But what you're describing, top 10 in points created, he just continues to shoulder the weight for a team that's 10-4.
But it's interesting you bring up the idea of how do we decentralize LeBron a little bit from this, because that leads us to our second little big number here, 49.2, the percentage of LeBron's baskets that have been assisted this season rather than self-created, his unassisted baskets. 49.2% assisted baskets. That would be a career high for LeBron, which makes sense. You're used to him having the ball in his hand, going downhill, generating for himself. But J.J. Redick, as you mentioned, when he got the job, he talked a ton about getting LeBron off the ball more, looking to keep his the workload down as a playmaker and a ball handler. It's not like totally decentralizing him in practice. He still leads the team in touches and time in possession, still like top 15, top 20 in the league. But the Lakers are passing the ball way more this season. The assist rate is up, and LeBron is the beneficiary of a lot of that. Turns out when you are able to sort of deputize and energize and put more of the responsibility in the hands of Austin Reeves, who's playing great, D'Angelo Russell, who has ups and downs but can certainly facilitate and deliver the ball, use LeBron as this weapon off the ball, it can mean really good things for the Lakers offense, which is one of the big reasons why they vaulted up to top five in points per possession.
Yeah, and I think when you look at their free throw rate, is consistently a story, is that how do they get so many free throws? Well, you got to get a lot of downhill movement, a lot of attacks at the rim, and that's taxing. Like, that's hard for LeBron James to continue to have to do that by himself. You know, remember James Harden with the Rockets, where his isolation numbers were through the roof, but every time he got to the playoffs, he just was so exhausted from all of the downhill trying to get those foul calls, and it is exhausting. So for LeBron James, if he wants to become like another champion or pursue another championship with J.J. Redick and Anthony Davis and perhaps Bronny James, just had to throw it in there, he's going to have to, you know, rely on his teammates a little bit more, maybe playing in Paris with Stephen Curry, who is a guy that redefined what it means to be a scoring superstar by playing off the ball. Maybe a little bit of that he's getting from Stephen Curry as well, and translating that to this season. You know, I keep expecting like his numbers to go down, LeBron, but now his assists are up to 9.4. So not only are the Lakers assisting LeBron more, he's assisting himself a lot more, which is absurd. Dan, you have another number for me?
Well, sub number here, you know who's a little bit above LeBron in points created per 36? That'd be Wardell Stephen Curry, 47.8 points per 36 minutes. So you're right, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, but getting off the ball is a pretty important one of them. How about 1.19? That is how many points the Lakers score on average on any play finished out of a LeBron pick and roll, according to our friends at Synergy Sports. That's not only a top 10 mark among players who finish at least 25 plays out of the pick and roll this season, it would be the highest of LeBron James's career. Again, his career spans back to when I was young and vital. And here he is being better at it than he ever was. And part of the reason why, as you astutely pointed out, he's doing this specific thing and like isolation specific things, he's doing them a little bit less. They're moving LeBron around. They're having him operate in more different areas. And so the volume of plays he's finishing out of the pick and roll is down. Only about three or four now. Some of it's the decreased frequency. You're obviously way more volume, the efficiency is going to go down. You ride that usage efficiency curve the other way. And LeBron is, every time LeBron, they finish a play out of a LeBron pick and roll, they're scoring nearly 1.2 points per possession, which would be one of the best offenses in the league over the course of the full season, any season of all time. And it sort of goes back to that idea of that maybe Eric Spoelstra was on the front end of it. We de-emphasize LeBron being like ISO heavy on the ball. We find other places to put him. We put him in the post. We spread the floor for him. We have him cutting off the ball. It turns out when you have a guy who is good at everything and then only gets better at even the things he's not that good at, already his superpowers get even more incredible. So like, he's sort of like, what if the Hulk also flew and also had heat vision, and if Superman was that angry all the time? That's kind of what we're seeing at this point, and it's manifesting in stuff like every pick and roll they finish for out of him is 1.2 points per possession. Beyond bonkers.
I remember the story that Brian Windhorst wrote. I think it was for ESPN Heat Index. Shout out to the Heat Index. He wrote, LeBron's only weakness, that was the headline, was his free throws. This is his only weakness. And like, you're right. Pick and roll, initiating the pick and roll as a ball handler. Finishing the pick and roll as a screen setter and roller, something that Eric Spoelstra and he really worked on after that Dallas loss. There isn't really a weakness in his game, except for the free throw line, which he's already like, he's fine. He's fine if that's considered a weakness. You might point to he was not a great three-point shooter early in his career, as that is the most glaring weakness in his game. He's not going to space the ball. And now you're seeing he's finishing in the pick and roll. He's initiating the pick and roll. He's passing at a ridiculous rate. And now he's adding this three-point shot where it's just, you know, he's doing it in way like in the corners. You see it in that Memphis game. Zach Edey was like, yo, I'm just not going to guard you out. So he's going under in the pick and roll. And he's Zach Edey. He doesn't want to have to, you know, blitz the screen anyway. And LeBron's just stepping into a three. He's doing that whole like look down at the ball and then shoot a three thing, which is the most bizarre like superhero move, you know, in like Street Fighter where they have like a signature move.
Yep.
How is looking at the ball and then like shooting a three so lethal? I don't understand that, Dan.
I guess the idea is every defender is going to be like, well, if he's looking at it, he's clearly not going to shoot it. Like for some, it's disarming. It's like it lends to itself of a sense of calm and you know de-escalation in the defender. And you got to stop doing that, defenders. Also, Zach Edey, I think there's a lot to love about Zach Edey and a lot to respect about Zach Edey. Don't go under on LeBron James anymore. That stopped being an okay thing to do. I mean, I guess you have to pick your poison, but that stopped being an okay thing to do around about the time that Dwayne Casey won a title with it. And then LeBron has spent the last, like, then he spent the entirety of Dwayne Casey's Toronto career making Dwayne Casey pay for that. So we can't go under on LeBron anymore. You know who else he can't go under
on?
Wait,
hold on. On that note, remember when Greg Popovich, like, in the finals was like, we're not going to guard LeBron, let him shoot a bunch of jumpers. That was a very humbling moment for LeBron.
Yes.
And I think a lot of this can be, you know, traced back to that moment of the Spurs daring LeBron James to shoot. And still, people are going under on those screens. And it reminds me of Tobias Fünke, who's like, but it might work for us. You know, yeah. Like the idea of it, you know, it's all these people are watching LeBron look at the ball. And you know what? I know that he's hit it 100 times, and that's a bad idea. No, it never works out for them, but it might work for us. That's my Arrested Development reference for the day. What else you got for me, Dan?
One more person. I don't know how his development seems to be going fine. Not so much Arrested. Dalton Knecht, Lakers first round pick, the rookie, 15.5 plus 15.5. That's our fourth little big number. That is how many more points per 100 possessions the Lakers are scoring when Dalton Knecht is on the floor, according to our friends at Cleaning the Glass. Their numbers strip out garbage time. You put Dalton Knecht on the floor long enough, the Lakers are going to start playing some more garbage time. 11.3 points in 21.5 minutes per game for the first-round pick out of Tennessee, shooting 62.5% on two-pointers, 46.4% on nearly 5 3-pointers a game, 92.3 at the line. In four starts, he's over 20 points a game on 57-52-86 shooting splits. It turns out, Tom, that if you put a big knockdown shooter next to LeBron James and Anthony Davis, your offense is going to get better. Who knew?
I can't believe that we like moved away from spacing LeBron James. Like Kyle Korver, like let's put Kyle Korver next to this dude. James Jones next to this. Mike Miller, let's put him. Shane Battier, and see what happens when he's spaced with an elite three-point shooter. Maybe that was it. Maybe LeBron was like, if y'all don't do it for me, I'm just going to do it myself. And he became a 41% three-point shooter. Dalton Knecht four, another number for four. NBA Crazy Stats Twitter handle, he reached out to me and said, I was just looking for the hottest hot streak in NBA history. And he created a list of most consecutive points made by one player in NBA history in a game. And okay. He found that Dalton Knecht's 22 straight the other night was top 10 in NBA history, according to what he was tracking. He had Larry Costello, the great, pour one out for Larry Costello, number one on the list with 32 points. Carmelo with 26. LeBron had 25. He also had 24 in another game. Klay Thompson had 23. Kobe, MJ, another 23. Of course, MJ had 23. Manu Ginobili had 24 in a game. Devin Booker had 25 back in the day. Zach LaVine got on a heater for 25 back in 2021. Dalton Connect is already on that list. He's a rookie. He's a rookie. And he's doing these kinds of things that players will go their entire career without getting as hot as he was the other night. And maybe that's because LeBron James knows a thing or two about getting hot from beyond the arc.
1,000%. What did LeBron James say after the game the other night? Like, y'all effed up giving me this guy. It's like you know, like the last thing this guy needs is another weapon. And here he has one. And the Lakers have a top five offense and a top four seed at the moment because of it, or not because of it, but in large part due to it. It's really sickening that we are this far into LeBron James's career and it's still happening. You mentioned we've all written that story. I just looked up one for me. March 18th, 2019, LeBron James is slowing down. Nope. Wrong, Dan. You blew it. You got it wrong.
Well, did you celebrate the 5-year anniversary of that article last year?
Yeah, I did. I gathered my family and my friends, my nearest and dearest, so they could all boo me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all have that graveyard story. It's right. Like, yeah, that one's going into the trash. We're not going to speak of that one again, but it speaks to us and the humility and the ability to poke fun at each other and ourselves. Conan O'Brien taught me that, is you need to be self-deprecating. And on this show, we're going to poke some fun at each other and ourselves. And like, look, LeBron, that's part of the fun, is we see this from LeBron and it reminds us why we continue to watch these games, is because there's this element of surprise and there's this element of unpredictability that when you tune in to watch LeBron James play, he might do something that you never knew he had in his bag. And the three-point shooting, the triple doubles at age 39, if you want to see the number that I dropped on KOC's show last week, some people liked that one. He's got more triple doubles since turning 39 than John Stockton, than Kawhi Leonard, than Moses Malone, than Anthony Edwards, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, all combined in their entire careers. And it's just astounding what this guy continues to do. So not that we need to belabor the point, but LeBron James is so special. And I love that he's, you know, like if you look at the NBA history, not many players got better at things as they aged. You know, like,
yeah,
look at Michael Jordan at the Wizards, right? He was good, but he wasn't good at three-point shooting still, even though the game was starting to embrace this and it was pointing to this is where it's going. He wasn't a 40% shooter from downtown. And man, we could go down that rabbit hole of MJ versus LeBron. But you know what? Damn, I've got another rabbit hole I want to get to. It's this latest article that I posted on Yahoo Sports. I want to get your take on it right after the break. All right, so before we wrap this show up, let's get into the scoreboard real quick. Over-unders that we do every week. So far, we've got 14 that are live. I've got 9 of them hitting. You've got 6 of them hitting. One big thing that changed was Russell Westbrook. Now over 100 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor with the Denver Nuggets. So congrats to you, Dan.
I trust. Listen, trusting Russell Westbrook and believing him, it has never failed me yet, and it certainly won't fail me this time. So the line is going to continue to go straight up.
Russell Westbrook only has 2 dunks this season, but he's taking threes at a historically high rate, according to his career. Great transition here into my latest feature story at Yahoo Sports. The headline is, the NBA shot desert problem is real. Could three-point dunks save us? Save us! From the sameness, the redundancy of rims and threes, rims and threes, rims and threes. Damn, this is an interesting topic. Hoop idea, what, you know, we used to do early age NBA Twitter, where we come up with a way to fix the NBA. I haven't really done that in a while, and this story is my attempt to address one of the more fascinating ideas from Fox Sports 1's Nick Wright, who wasn't as excited about watching the NBA this season. He calls himself, you know, a super fan in the NBA, and wasn't super excited because of the fact that he thinks there's too many threes in the NBA. Too many.
Very familiar opinion. Yeah.
He's not the first person to say this. I think Charles Barkley has probably said it a billion times, but the idea is, all right, if we do see the ratings tumble a little bit this season, whether that's due to, you know, a presidential election or the NFL is killing it or the WNBA is killing it or whatever. Question is, how do we drive down the number of three-pointers if we do believe that it is not good for the game? His idea, one of his ideas, was really interesting. The idea of having a three-point dunk. Essentially, we need to incentivize Anthony Edwards dunking on dudes like Domantas Sabonis last week. We need to incentivize Ja Morant to do it. Russell Westbrook, whether he can do it still at this age or not, it is interesting that like he's decided to shoot more threes and not go at the rim as much. And that to me is indicative of a larger problem of this kind of homogenous playing style where the Boston Celtics win the NBA title by going five and out, doing driving kicks and trying to get layups or kick out for three pointers. And they have those perimeter players anchored there. Kristaps, Drew, Derek, Jason, and Jalen all just anchored around the 3-point line. And Nick Wright's idea is just, hey, let's make dunks worth 3 points. So first blush, Dan, what are your thoughts on the idea of dunks, the high-flying acrobatics being incentivized by rewarding them, not just with 2 points, but with three?
So generally, I mean, the problem this is trying to solve is that they're like, any sober analyst is going to be like, well, three is not just worth more than two. It's worth like 1.5 of two. And so, of course, it makes more sense to try to get those as often as you can. So if you change the scoring system to dunks are worth three and, you know, threes are worth four, or dunks are worth three and threes are worth three, you've leveled out the incentive structure and said, like, it makes more sense for you to try to do the more exciting play than other kinds of plays. And I'm like, I will admit I felt dumb about hoop idea stuff. Like, I am not a big picture thinker about these sorts of things where I'm like, well, clearly the answer to every problem is like there needs to be 9 different divisions that are all regionally based and we seed everybody into pods and everybody plays one another 1.3 times. And that's how we arrive at the most balanced schedule. Like, I'm stupid about that stuff. I'm like, there's 82 games and there's 48 minutes and we play the way we play. And sometimes people score more or less and things change. But like, I get the idea. I get the premise of it. If it means more dunking, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that's bad. I guess if we, like, the only thing I would want is if we're going to do that and make dunks worth three, let's stop doing things like dunk score, where we're evaluating with analytics whether dunks are cool.
No, we need dunk score. It's just a place to argue about whether that dunk was good or not.
All right, but you know what? This is dancing about architecture. Like, no, we don't need to say, like, to 3 decimal points whether Trey Mann's dunk was good. It was good. Trust me, because I watched it. In any event, I think, generally speaking, making dunks worth more points sounds like a good idea. I'm guessing everybody agrees with this.
No.
What?
I don't actually agree with this. Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's getting at the right idea, which is how do we create more shot diversity? How do we incentivize really cool plays in the league? However, I do think that the problem we have is not being solved by the advent of a 3-point dunk. And here's what I mean. I think what we're missing is the mid-range game. The nostalgia, sure, is one thing of like, you and I grew up watching Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, just owning that mid-range area, the fadeaways, the game winners, all of that. We hearken back to our childhoods. And of course, that dopamine hit, we're not getting that every time we watch the Boston Celtics launch 62 three-pointers. And then the Charlotte Hornets, who's coached by Charles Lee, who was the deputy under Joe Mazzulla last year, is now launching at a ridiculous rate with the Charlotte Hornets. It's becoming this homogenous thing where it's dunks and threes and free throws, right? They just want to keep attacking the rim and shooting threes. And that whole mid-range game is gone. I talked to Nick Elam for the story of the Elam ending.
Huh.
The Ball State professor who invented the Elam ending, which is the target score to end games. I'm a huge fan of the Elam ending, and I wanted to pick his brain. I was like, what do you think about the 3-point dunk rule? And he's like, you know, conceptually I like it, but it's not addressing the shot desert problem. The shot desert problem.
Follow-up question. What is the shot desert problem, Tom?
Well, young Danny boy, I've got a great answer for you. Thank you for raising your hand and asking that question.
That sent a chill up my spine. I hope we
young
never
Danny
do that
boy.
Again. All right, yes. Shot deserts, hit me.
Shot desert is when an entire game happens and one of the teams does not score from the mid-range area.
Mm.
No points scored in the mid-range area. And I was curious if that had ever happened this year. Turns out it's happened 24 times, Dan.
Jeez, okay. That is a lot more than I would have expected.
24 times this year that a team has not even scored, not even tried, not even made an imprint on that huge area of the floor outside the paint and inside the three-point arc. And in 2011, there were zero such games. And we've already had 24, and we're on pace for 136, which is a huge increase from last year where there's 80 desert games in the entire season, and we're a quarter of the way there already, and we haven't even hit Thanksgiving. So, Dan, I think that's the problem. I think we need more shot diversity, more unpredictability. When you get run off the line, are you going to pull up for an open mid-range jumper? No, you're going straight to the basket and then kicking out if you don't have a layup and then doing it all over again. And it reminds me in baseball when a guy would hit the ball up the middle and you'd be excited and you're like, yay, we got a hit. Mets just got a hit, or the Red Sox just got a hit. And then the shift, they like outsmarted baseball. They saw baseball and they're like, oh, we're going to put our fielders over here.
Yeah.
And that shot up the middle is no longer going to be a hit. And like, it's kind of a bummer when you're watching the game that you have to recalibrate in ball hits. Bad balls in play are no longer, you know, worth going for. We're going to go through three true outcomes, right? Strikeouts, walks, home runs, and you lose a little bit. And I think we're losing a little bit with the shot deserts, where, as Nick Elam termed it, we're just not using this giant area of the floor. And so I think, how do we get that? I have an idea. What if, Dan, and I know you already said this stuff hurts your brain to think about, but
no,
the
but
idea...
I like learning new things. I like entertaining new ideas. I just bad at generating them, but you have one, I'm here. I'm wrapped.
What if we shorten the three-point line and add a four-point line? So it's 2, 3, 4. And the mid-range game is now going to be incentivized by making that area of the floor, 15 feet and beyond, is worth 3 points. And then at 35 feet and beyond is worth 4 points. Because what we're having right now is that shot desert where huge areas of the floor are not being used. And if we shorten the three-point line, I think people are saying, why don't we extend the three-point line, make it 40 feet? Well, then I think the shot desert expands. I think you're going to see even more of that area not being used, because then everyone's going to go to that four-point line or that three-point, that extended three-point line. So I say shorten the three-point line at 15 feet and then add the four-point line so we still get those crazy four-point, those crazy logo threes are now going to be fours. And we get more shot diversity. It's going to recalibrate how defenses play. And when you get run off the four-point line, you can go to a three or you can go to the rim. And that, I think, is going to add more play-to-play excitement than what we have right now.
And also just, I mean, quick looking at through StatHead at the shot finder there, no player has taken more than four shots from beyond 35 feet so far this season. So, like, if you're talking about volume, that's like it immediately addresses some of that concern. Because my first thought was like, if you make a 4-point line and people are like, well, it's double two, it's still worth, like, the incentive structure is still there, but making a 35 footer is really freaking hard. And like, maybe in 15-20 years with the way skill development works, players will become automatic from there too. But you're right, it does increase the likelihood of more shots coming from more places on the floor, more ways to skin the cat, like we were talking about, and then more the way you can scheme up looks, or the way you can, you know, draw up sets to try to maximize or leverage different areas. I think it's an interesting plan. I don't know if it gets us more dunks. And if the goal is to get us more dunks, I don't know that necessarily solves the problem.
Well, I want to address that.
Okay.
I don't think we want to incentivize more dunks by adding a three-point dunk because of the injury risk. I think what you saw with Chet Holmgren when Andrew Wiggins took off and was like, I'm going to yam on this dude. And then Chet Holmgren went up and collided midair, broke his hip, and he's out for 2 months. That stuff happens more than we think because of collisions in the air. And if we're incentivizing guys from going up and trying to dunk on everybody, what you're also going to get is a lot of defenders. They're going to go way out of their way to prevent that from happening and going crazy. We're going to get a lot of those train wrecks at the top of the summit. And I'm worried about what that does for a league that is already dealing with the crisis of stars missing huge swaths of the schedule. And we're just now learning Luka Doncic is out for at least a week with a wrist injury. So there's another star that we're missing. And I feel like if we make 3-point dunks a real thing, we're going to see a lot more players like Anthony Edwards. He actually missed 2 games last year because of a hip injury from falling after a dunk attempt. Zion Williamson, like the dude loves dunking more than anything on this planet, and he can't stay healthy. So maybe that would be a cure that is actually worse than the disease. If we incentivize more dunks, I feel like that will create a lot more injuries. I might be wrong about that, but damn, that's why you should go read it. Those listening, read the story, because like I'm still on the fence here. Like I think it's interesting, the idea of a 3-point dunk, but I think there's some negative externalities that go associated with that. And I think the answer, while I'm okay with the idea of the getting rid of the corner three, I hear the idea of just make all twos threes and all threes fours to lower the premium on those long distance shots. But I think the best answer is a 2-3-4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Woman on the floor. Gotta get it down. Sorry.
I don't ever apologize for singing Coolio to me. Ever. Seriously. Tom, how many times do I have to tell you stop apologizing for singing Coolio to me? I was also thinking about Feist. 1, 2, 3, 4. Tell me that you love me more.
5, 6, 7, 8.
So good. We're all going to spin with our beach balls and whatever. I don't think
I've even seen the video. So what, there are beach balls involved?
It's delightful. It's a one tracking shot. And it's like she's moving through it. It's everybody. After you finish the show, go check out the video for Feist. 1, 2, 3, 4. A new reference.
Hold on. After the show, also after you read the new Yahoo Sports story.
That's exactly right.
And then you can go watch that video.
Also, I have so many thoughts. Also, negative externalities is sounds like a weird speed metal band that would play at Sloan. It's like it's all like the nerds at MIT that also play loud guitar. And I think the real answer to this, more than anything else, is you do 2-3-4, but you keep the 2 and the 3 the same, and you move the 4 to the mid-range, and then Carmelo Anthony makes a comeback. That's what we need. Really, what we need here is Melo jab-stepping from 18 feet, but it's worth a ton. That's what we really need to have happen here, because that is the art. That's where art meets math, and that's what we need. It's what we need to sort of strive for, big number-wise, I think. More Carmelo Anthony jab-stepping is, I think, what as we find a way to make that mathematically sound. It solves all our problems.
And then LeBron James can win a title with Carmelo Anthony.
Yes! Finally, we found the answer, Tom.
Make mid-range jumpers worth 4 points. All right. We just talked about the 4-point shot, the 3-point shot, the 2-point shot. That's a wrap on this week's big number about LeBron James's 3-point shooting, 826. We're going to be back here next week. Thanksgiving is here. So the schedule is going to be a little bit different, but we will be back on the airwaves next week, as we do every week here at Yahoo Sports. Dan, scoreboard 9-6. Good luck next week.
I'm coming. We're going to, all I need is 1 4-pointer and I'm right back on top of this thing.
Before we go, I want to give a shout out to our producers, Emmy and John, for producing the show. Also, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Go tell your friends. And we're going to be right here next week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll talk soon.